It'll be like a 4-week debrief with Warren.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome. Glad you're here. How many of you are new to a city council meeting? Well, we're especially grateful for those of you that are new and those of you that are taking time out of your otherwise busy day to join us here. Just a few protocols of the room. They're intended to facilitate dialogue and democracy and the exchange of sometimes differing points of view. It's a little warm-up speech I give before most meetings. It's not that I look out and am concerned, but for this particular crowd, if you're here representing an organization, that can be a nonprofit, a for-profit, another government, if you're authorized to speak as on their behalf, an organization's behalf, you have to mention that when you come to the microphones. We only want, even though your name will be called for the record, we have to have you repeat your name at the beginning of your testimony. And again, if you're lobbying on behalf of anybody, we don't want your phone number and we don't want your email address. We don't want your ad. We don't want your address. We don't, just your name is fine. And you'll have 3 minutes, and there's a clock there that will count down your time, and then Carla calls out folks based on sign-up or invited testimony. So we're really glad that you're here. With that, before we officially begin, is Reverend Santos Lyons here? Oh, please come forward, Reverend. Welcome back. We have a special presentation, then we'll get into public comment. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. So for the record, my name is Joseph Santos Lyons. I'm with the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, also a community minister with the First Unitarian Church of Portland. So good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. We want to thank you for your leadership for the proclamation you're about to deliver for Democracy Week, to recognize the value and passion of Oregon's citizens and the passion we have for democracy here. Oregon leads the nation in civic involvement and in voting, but we still have a long way to go to engage all communities in civic life. 800,000 people in Oregon are eligible but not registered to vote. And as the bus project points out, 500,000 of those people in Oregon are under the age of 40. Many of the organizations involved in the proclamation today are from communities of color. APANO and our Asian Pacific Islander Vote Oregon Coalition is working to engage Oregon's fast-growing and diverse Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities. We do multilingual outreach, and we do cross-cultural civic engagement and leadership development. We want to just say that we really hope that this proclamation is one more positive step in Portland's important work to engage all citizens in our democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and please stay there. The proclamation. Whereas the City of Portland has been a trailblazing leader in citizen involvement and democratic engagement throughout history, and whereas the more people who participate in Portland's democracy, the better our democracy works and serves the needs of everyone in our community, and whereas Portland can and should continue to lead the nation in having the most effective, accessible, and inspiring democracy, and whereas a free democracy should exist without barriers to participation, and whereas increasing awareness about important elections and voter registration deadlines prior to the deadline will increase the likelihood that underrepresented Portlanders register to vote, and whereas increasing community participation in our election leads to a healthier and more responsive local government, and whereas vital civic organizations, including the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, the Bus Project, the City Club of Portland, Oregon Action, the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, the Chinese Benevolent Consolidated Benevolent Association, the Chinese American Citizen Alliance, the Portland Japanese American Citizens Leagues, Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon, the League of Women Voters of Portland, and the Urban League of Portland see voting and civic engagement as vital to the health of our community, and whereas the week of April 16th through 22nd is the week before the voter registration deadline for the May primary, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim April 16th through 22nd, 2012, to be Democracy Week in Portland, and encourage all residents to sign up and register to vote.
Amen.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you all.
And if anybody needs voter registration cards, there's some on the front desk in my office.
All right, now the city council will come to official order. Carla, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
Did you enjoy the wettest month of March on record?
Yes.
Oh, you liar. can you please call the roll?
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall begin with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 325?
Request of Teresa Baldwin to address council regarding retaining funding for the SUN program.
Ms. Baldwin, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you. So good morning, Mayor Adams and members of the council. My name is Teresa Baldwin. I'm the superintendent of Centennial School District, and I appreciate your time today.
Yay.
We're here to advocate on behalf of the Schools Uniting Neighborhoods program, otherwise known as the SUN program. And if you're familiar with it or not, let me give you a brief description. It's a program that operates a very high-quality after-school program for middle school students. It provides academic support, like homework help, for example. It also provides a light meal and additional recreational activities, enrichment activities in the hours immediately following school, time when students might otherwise be in a less supportive environment at home. It also operates 8 weeks in the summer. And students in that program are there most of the day receiving three meals and a full program of academic and social and recreational activities. It's a very valuable program. It's been operating for 9 years in Centennial School District. As part of my team today, I have Principal Doug Cook with me and the SUN Coordinator Gina Richardson. But it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you a very special guest today, a graduate of Centennial High School and a former participant in the middle school program. At Centennial Middle School. So I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Aurelio Lorenzo.
Hello, my name is Aurelio Leonardo. I am 19 years old and graduate from Centennial High School. I'm currently attending Mount Hood Community College and hope to pursue a career path in engineering. I'm speaking on behalf of the SUN program at Centennial Middle School, in which I was a part of for 6 years. Four of those, I worked as a mentor. The program impacted me strongly when I attended my 2 years in middle school. It was a structured way to use my time, and I'm very grateful to have had the SUN program. If I didn't have the program, I may have become involved in reckless behavior. Being able to go fishing was one of the most memorable moments of my school years. I loved that I could go out and fish with my friends and just have a great time in such a wonderful environment. Fishing was such a blast, but I also was involved with the soccer club, which is a huge passion of mine. I have always been an athlete, and being able to go play with so many others, discovering new talent, and later becoming friends with so many of my teammates was a priceless moment for myself. The SUN program is a safe and healthy environment for young kids to stimulate their minds in a positive manner. I am deeply saddened to have learned that the SUN program may be lost as it provided a productive place for children to go to. When children don't have after-school activities, they are most likely prone to get involved with the wrong crowds and can lead to negative behavior. This after-school program provides many activities and clubs such as homework club, wrestling, multicultural club, art club, and lessons on fencing and piano. These are a few of the great things we had to offer in this after-school program that may be in danger. I believe this would be a tragic choice, and many kids are going to be affected in a negative way. What I have witnessed in today's lifestyle, kids as young as age 10 are getting involved in gangs or focus too much time on social media. The program teaches children to learn about others and themselves, and therefore are more likely to receive better grades in school. It prepares students to grow and develop proper social skills to later use in life as citizens. The program is fun. It keeps children busy and entertained. It's upsetting to have the SUN program, along with many others from multiple schools, possibly be cut. After all, they are what is needed to mold young minds of our future. My younger brother, Jorge, is a special ed student who attended the SUN program when he was in middle school. My family and I have noticed him excel in many aspects in life and is set to graduate this year in June. The SUN program taught him self-confidence and made him want to get involved in more activities later when in high school. He has grown so much, and it's because of this program. Sometimes Jorge will even go back and visit teachers in the program and participate as a guest in some of the activities still there today. This program has provided Jorge a place to visit and feel safe. If programs like the SUN program get eliminated from our educational system, children are going to realize that their education and keeping them out of trouble are not important. When there is after-school activities, children can choose to make a better choice for themselves, like furthering their learning by staying after school and being involved. Being a young adult myself, I find this program essential for young kids to thrive, so please consider keeping the Centennial SUN program. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well done.
Mayor Adams, if I may, during communications, it's usually not our practice to have a two-way conversation. This is our chance to hear from the public, and I want to say it's an honor to have you both here, and Mr. Leonardo, thank you for your outstanding testimony.
Thank you.
And I just want to make an assurance to you. This council, during tough budget times, has worked hard to try to protect SUN, because every member of this council believes that SUN is a critical investment in our children and our youth and our future leaders. Your testimony reminds us, again, about those success stories. So thank you. We do have a budget hole this year we're going to have to fill. And it is true that there are proposals out of the children's levy, the city, and the county about possible cuts in SUN. No decision has been made. And a chance like this for us to hear from people who are passionate about the program will have an impact on our decision making. But I've talked to Dan before the meeting, and I just want to assure you about something. If we have to make a tough choice somewhere down the road and reduce any funding for SUN, please be assured that our criteria will include looking at schools and districts that have high poverty, high free and reduced lunch, and other criteria. We will not cut in areas with the greatest need. And your presence here will help us make wise decisions if we have to make reductions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And Superintendent, thank you for all your leadership. You've been superintendent how long?
Just this year. I've been superintendent, you know, for many years, but in the Portland area, just 1 year in Centennial.
You're doing a great job. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Can you please read the title for item number 326?
He was 326.
Sorry. Can you please read the title for item number 327?
Request of Lynn Saxton to address council regarding Youth Villages Christie Care of Oregon provides services they provide.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. It's a privilege to be here today. And this appearance came out of a conversation with Commissioner Fish about the merger of Youth Villages and Christie Care of Oregon. Christie Care has been providing services to children throughout the state and throughout Portland for 153 years, hard to imagine, but true. And we are now very proud since June of 2011 to have brought the country's leading intervention for children at risk and families at risk, which is the INTERCEPT program, to Oregon. This program has been recognized by Casey Family Programs and the Harvard Business School as the highest results-driven, results-producing intervention for severely emotionally disturbed and troubled youth, including gang members, in the United States today. So I'm pleased to bring you that good news. There's an opportunity now to make successful interventions. These are family-focused interventions, permanency interventions. This service changes the trajectory of children's lives and their families at an 80% success rate, which is double the national average. So that's my sole purpose, and we've always enjoyed our partnership. We've worked with Commissioner Saltzman on children issues for years, and we just wanted to bring you some good news. I also want to underscore that in the last 10 months since the merger, we are serving twice as many children at lower cost with better results, and that's as good as it gets in this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sexton, and your card's in here. I'm going to make an email introduction to the STRIVE program.
Great.
With
Thank
the county
you.
And with Antoinette Edwards, who directs the mayor's office on gang violence prevention. So thanks for all the work you're doing and for the merger. I know those are hard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you please read the title for item number 328?
Request of David G. Gwyther to address council regarding municipal bonds and property taxes.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to address you. My name is David Gwyther. I'm a candidate for City Council Position 1. We have two problems which, if combined, can become a solution in the municipal bond and property tax area. First of all, small savers are having a hard time getting a decent return with a safe value on their investments. So municipal bonds, especially issued by the City of Portland, very highly rated, could provide that if they're denominated in small enough denominations that small savers could buy them. As you may know from reading the paper, the state of Oregon has discontinued the property tax abatement program that they had, where seniors and other people who are having problems, mostly the seniors, who are house rich but cash poor, can defer their property taxes until their houses are sold when they move or whatever. I think the city should move into this area using some of their municipal bond power, a revenue bond that pays, let's say, 2.5%, 3%. They could be deep discounted, zero coupon bonds, et cetera, so that somebody with $1,500, $2,000 could buy one, could finance the property taxes, sewer, and water abatements for some of our people that are getting taxed out of their homes. The program could be set up on a pilot basis with strict criteria. Let's say you have to be 75 years or older to take advantage of it. Your property has to be worth less than $300,000 or $400,000, so that we're not subsidizing some really large pieces of income. And this way we could have a method in which some of our citizens who've paid property taxes for the last 30 or 40 years could hold onto their homes until they're comfortable in terms of moving in or selling their properties. Have any questions?
Appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you please read the title for item number 329?
Request of Grace Groom to address council regarding support of Sun Schools.
Hi, welcome.
You
have a sun on your forehead.
I do. You know, it was the rainiest March on record, so I thought I'd bring it to you.
Thank you.
Grace, you were at our last budget forum?
I was, yes.
Thanks
along
for
with
coming. Thanks for coming again.
Thanks. Along with many people from Sun and several from my son's school, Roseway Heights Community School. It's a K-8 school. So I'm here to speak in support of all of Sun programming, and in particular, Roseway Heights Sun School. As you know, Sun Schools is impacting many Portlanders. The documents I've read, at least 20,000 users are a part of Sun Schools. And it fills a great need, especially in these times. We know the major cuts are going to be going on in our city schools. And there's just not any money for enrichment activities. That's what keeps kids coming to school, as you heard Mr. Leonardo say. It makes such a difference in their attendance and in their achievement. And that's been proven. Northwest Regional Ed Labs has done independent studies to show that Sun Schools really, really works. And there's also been a recent article published in Education Week highlighting why Sun Schools has been so successful, and a lot of it is due to multiple stakeholders, collaboration. If Sun Schools is only run by the county and city doesn't have some stake in it, I fear that it's just not going to be as successful. If we all share it and we do it for our kids, it's going to continue to be successful. One of the concerns I had in reading the recommendations from Portland Parks and Recreation about cutting Sun is that it's very low on the priority list of the 30 things that they're focusing on. It's number 16. And I would just encourage maybe some readjustment in those priorities because recreation is a big part of what Portland Parks and Recreation is all about. I do know that the cuts are needed to be happening, but it's going to be more drastic for those families, including my own, if those services aren't there. More drastic than closing and reopening a bathroom or taking away a trash can. When you shut down those schools, those kids just don't have those services in any other form. I brought support letters from Roseway Heights School. I wanted to read a couple. Wasn't able to get the first graders out of school today to read them themselves, but in the time I have left, I'd like to read a couple. This one is from Taylor at Roseway Heights. It says, "Dear Mayor Adams, I've learned a lot of rules in Sun Schools. I've learned about respect, hard work, listening, and all of that in skateboarding. Please save our Sun Schools." This one from Shea, very heartfelt. Dear Mayor Adams, please save our sun schools. It is important to us. These are all exclamation marks. What will happen without sun schools? We need it. Without sun schools, we won't have sun schools, and we won't learn how to say please. We won't know anything at all. We will know some things. We would only know love. So please help save sun schools. Help us. Love the school and love us. If you help us, we will love you so much. Thank you so very much. Love, Shea, your friend from Roseway Heights.
Promises, promises. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We're now considering the consent agenda. I understand that items 3, 4, 6, and 3, 4, 8 have been pulled.
Question.
Carla. Yeah. Yeah. We'll make copies so everyone has one.
Make sure they get it.
Carla, I understand that items 3, 4, 6, and 3, 4, 8 have been pulled. Is that right?
Correct.
You want to read the titles for those?
Mm-hmm. 3, 4, 6. Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Mason Flats Wetland Enhancement 2 project, number E10406. And 48 is authorized marketing agreements for the Portland Loo.
All right. Any other items that need our attention regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Zaltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. The consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the titles for 330, 331, 332, 333, 334, 335, 336, 337?
Oh, the 330 is its own time certain, the 930.
Sorry, okay. 331 through 337.
Do you want to go ahead and take care of 330 first?
Just going to put that over.
It's just moving, being continued to the 26.
Yes.
Okay. 330, tentatively uphold appeal of Verizon Wireless leasee with conditions and overturn the hearings officer's decision to deny a conditional use and adjustment for a wireless telecommunications facility at Mount Scott Fuel Company, 6904 Southeast Foster Road, LU11125536CUAD.
Mayor, I move that this agenda item be continued to April 26, 2012 at 3 p.m.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on the motion?
Fish.
Aye.
Zaltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Motion is approved. Now, would you please read the titles 331 through 337?
331. Approve the 42nd Avenue Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. 332. Approve the Cully Boulevard Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. 333, approve the Park Rose Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. 334, approve the Rosewood Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. 335, approve the Division Midway Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. 336, approve the 82nd Avenue and Division Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Plan. And 337, authorize intergovernmental agreements with Portland Development Commission for transfer of tax increment revenues and shared tax revenues related to Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative Urban Renewal Districts.
Thank you, Carla. The first thing I need to do is to move an amendment. We have a Scribner's error, but I think it would be better if we just move it as an amendment. It's to section 10-C. Shall be replaced in its entirety with the following language. No indebtedness for which taxes divided under ORS 457.440 are to be pledged, shall be issued under this plan, parentheses, or under any of the projects undertaken with respect to this plan, closed parentheses, once maximum indebtedness is reached.
Moved
and seconded. Can you please call the vote on the motion to amend the Scribner's error?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Thank you. Motion approved. This City Council and this Portland Development Commission have sought to put financial muscle behind the policies that were Chair Kogan, great, come on up. And this county government and county chair have sought to put policy muscle and financial muscle behind the long-stated feel-good words of equity in terms of our ability to assist neighborhood business districts and businesses in East Portland and North Portland. Today, the issue before the City Council is a follow-up to the 2011 Neighborhood Economic Development Strategy that laid out a very inclusive process with Venture Portland, with the East Portland Action Plan, with the business districts, with the East Portland Chamber of Commerce, with a number of community groups, equity groups. The 2011 Neighborhood Economic Development Strategy moves forward significantly with the City-County Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative. We still have a long ways to go, but this is a big leap forward. And I want to thank you at the outset, Commissioner Kogan, and your team for the great partnership on this, and hope that you'll talk about the innovations that you're bringing to county government to assist small businesses across the county. I'm very grateful for the innovation and partnership on this issue. I want to congratulate the six neighborhood groups, neighborhood business groups, who have successfully applied to be in the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative program. You've worked extremely hard over the past 6 months, and your efforts will yield great results as you move forward to invest over the next 9 years. We've established steering committees where the Portland Development Commission is your partner in making sure that everything from the amount of money that you have to raise on your own, which as bitter a medicine as that might feel at times in a recession, really is going to make you stronger. We're there to help you fundraise. We're there to help you make sure that that happens. And with that, you get all the leverage that's being provided by the city and the county. So you're going to hear more about it in detail in a minute, but I'd like to introduce Multnomah County Chair Jeff Cope.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm happy to be here this morning to urge your support for the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative as well as the IGA between the city and the county, and to share some of my perspective about why I think this is such a great development. I know that you're all aware of the fact that in the past, I personally and other members of the county have had issues with urban renewal in the city of Portland, and I just want to be really clear. Those were significant challenges. We raised them because we had real concerns, but the city, Mayor Adams, has actually really responded in a way that I think is worth noting and appreciating. And most of the concerns had to do with the impact that urban renewal has had on other jurisdictions, the fact that urban renewal has sometimes created areas that go on and on and on, and that sometimes it's led to concentration of focus on the central city rather than on the rest of our community. And this is really a great example of how the mayor and the city and PDC has really responded to those concerns. So I guess I want to share some of my thoughts about the process and about the specifics, and then about some of the ways in which we hope to work together. First of all, the process here has really been terrific. The county has been at the table since the very beginning. We've worked right from the get-go with PDC and with the mayor's office to help shape this in a way that really addresses our concerns, and that makes a big difference, and we really appreciate that. And I think that partially because of that and partially because of the terrific community engagement that's been part of this process as well, what we see here with this Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative is a new kind of urban renewal, and a urban renewal that, in my view, makes sense for this community in the 21st century. And the differences, at least some of them that I'd like to highlight, first of all, the investments are very carefully targeted, meaning that they're focused on narrow areas. It's not broad swaths of the city, giant pieces of tax base being sequestered. It's very, very narrow and focused. And it's focused in parts of the community that have not always been the beneficiaries of city and county investments, specifically business districts in East Portland. And that is a really important and meaningful change here. It's also the case that the investments are time limited. It's going to go for 10 years, and that's it. And that's a terrific development as well. And it's the case that the nature of these investments, partnering with the community, working with parts of the community that are ready to step up to the plate themselves, I think, first of all, that empowers the neighborhoods, but it also makes sure that these are investments that are being made in areas that are ready for the investments and want the investments, and I think are likely to, first of all, leverage it with the resources they have to bring to the table, but second of all, just have the attitude about this opportunity that I think is going to allow them to really take advantage of that opportunity. So I really do feel like in many ways this is responsive to some of the concerns that have been raised in the past and is a real innovation. And, you know, it'll take us a few years till we figure out whether this is really working as well as we think it's going to, but I think there's good reason to believe that it will. And I think that's terrific, and I just want to acknowledge it and thank you, Mayor Adams, and you, Patrick, and your staff for the way we've partnered on this. And it's a terrific pivot, and I think it's a good thing for the entire community. I also think that there's the agreement, the IGA between the city and the county that's part of this really traces back to an earlier way in which the city and the county began collaborating on urban renewal, which is in 2009, we jointly went down to the legislature and made some changes to urban renewal law that allows for tax base to begin to go back to the taxing jurisdictions earlier than it previously was able to when urban renewal areas are really working well. And I think that was a terrific partnership. One of the things that we see with this new development is just the nature of these urban renewal areas is such that it triggers that very early. And the dollars would go back to the jurisdictions very early. And because of the nature of these investments, the small total dollar value, but also the way this is a time-limited investment, the county and the city both felt that it was appropriate here to take those dollars that would otherwise be going back and reinvest them into these urban renewal areas. And that's what the IGA between the city and the county is. It's something that my colleagues and I feel is a good, wise investment, and I hope that you'll support it as well. And so the only other thing I would mention is that, as Mayor Adams suggested, the county is also beginning to look at other ways in which we can make investments that can help leverage this and partner with this. For example, we have a new microloan program that we've just begun in recent months, which will allow small targeted investments for businesses. It's focused on the same general area and also focused on businesses that are being started by immigrants, women, people of color. So hopefully it's going to work well so that some of the urban renewal investments can also be partnered with some of the county's microloan investments. And I think there are other ways as well in which we're going to partner with you on this. So I would thank you for your partnership and urge you to support this. Thank you.
Again, thank you for your leadership on this, and it's very exciting. Thank you. And we know you're very busy, so if you want to sit through a city council session, you're more than welcome, Mr. Chair, but if you need to leave, that's fine too.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm going to stay for the presentation, and then I think I will leave.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Mayor Adams and commissioners. It's a pleasure for me to be here today. I'm Aneshka Kolis-Dixon. I'm a commissioner over at the Portland Development Commission. And obviously, this is a very exciting, monumental day for our agency, as the county and the city and PDC all working together. This is very exciting for me to be able to be a part of this potential new neighborhood district. We really have appreciated all your support and encouragement to the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts, and the enthusiasm in the neighborhoods is evident. I've been able to tour all of the neighborhood proposed districts, as well as meet with a lot of the neighborhood leadership groups in Rosewood. I was able to meet that neighborhood leadership group in Rosewood, and the enthusiasm in the neighborhood and the ability for people in their communities to really have a voice is what really makes this whole initiative seem so important, and I think is receiving such positive support from community members, residents in neighborhoods, and obviously the city and the county, as well as the Portland Development Commission. I'm also the liaison for the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group over at the Portland Development Commission. And just a week ago, that Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Team voted unanimously to support the MPI districts as well. what I really love about these, again, is that they're community-led districts. It's more than just a policy initiative. It's a message of hope to areas that have long been underserved and are now a top priority of the city, as well as our members in East Portland, which, as we've mentioned, have oftentimes been left out of opportunities. Our board, the PDC Board of Commissioners, voted last month to recommend approval for the MPI districts after hearing so many impressive testimony from leaders and members in neighborhoods and business leaders in the neighborhoods speaking to our board. And so we were, of course, very enthusiastic and looking forward to being able to pass this initiative. So on behalf of the PDC Board of Commissioners, I would like to underscore our support for the creation of these districts and to ask for your approval as well. Thank you.
Commissioner Dixon, I don't want the moment to pass without just remarking what a fantastic new contribution that you've been making as commissioner on the Portland Development Commission. This initiative is an example of that, and I want you to know, I know I speak for everyone up here, how much we appreciate the long hours you put in. We're facing some difficult budget cuts, so we might have to cut your salary.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's zero.
I'm going to have to walk.
Yeah, she's a volunteer.
I already cut their parking. So.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Parking has been cut, so then all the perks are gone.
Make her pay to serve now?
Now you're getting paid for parking. Great.
Right.
We're a classy operation, aren't we? No, in all seriousness, thank you.
Thank you very much.
By the way, it's your father and brother who get all the perks and the boards that they're serving on.
Yeah,
the
different.
You chose the one that had the fewest.
Of course, of course. But for the community, it's well worth it. So thank you. I do appreciate that.
Thank you. Director Quinn.
Thank you. It's my honor to walk you through kind of the details of the actions that are in front of you. But I do want to second what Mayor Adams said about Commissioner Dixon and her leadership on this initiative and other initiatives since she's been on the board. She really has, you know, in addition to picking up the entire business of PDC, which is a steep learning curve, she has really made neighborhood business development and equity the focus of her work. And so we're happy to have her, as you know, showing leadership on all these initiatives. So it's great, and the entire board has been supportive of this and other similar initiatives. The entire neighborhood economic development strategy has enjoyed their not just their support, but they truly are committed to seeing it being implemented as it was envisioned. So I do want to just walk you through what this is all about, and there actually are, I think, 8 actions you're taking. So there's 6 new urban renewal areas that are being created. So those are 6 actions, and we'll talk about that in a second. But there's also two IGAs. There's an IGA between the city and PDC on the debt. It's not really debt, but we have to legally call it debt. And then the second one is the IGA that Chair Kogan mentioned, which is an IGA around the revenue sharing agreement between the county, the city, and PDC. And then after I'm done, I think you're going to hear from a number of our partners, and there have been many on this, in addition to the 6 districts who I think are all represented here. You're going to hear from some of the other partners who have been instrumental in this work, and it really differentiates this work from stuff that we've done in the past. I just want to start with making sure that we understand that the context is this fits squarely within, obviously, our neighborhood economic development strategy, which we proposed last summer and you adopted. And so this is part of the implementation of that. That strategy sits within the economic development strategy that we've been working under for the past almost 3 years now. It fulfills one of the 3 major tenets of that strategy, which is the economic development strategy. We talked about stimulating neighborhood business vitality, and the NED strategy is the fulfillment of that. But it's also it also fits squarely within the Portland plan, and I think later this month you'll be hearing taking a look at the Portland plan, and it is we work closely with our partners at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to make sure that the NED strategy and the MPI initiative was fit the values of the Portland plan, and they obviously worked closely with us to make sure that the actions that we were taking on both the economic development front as well as the neighborhood economic development front were incorporated into the Portland plan, and so you see that. And in particular, I there's obviously the economic prosperity and affordability goal of the Portland plan that this fits into, But there's also the equity framework for the entire Portland plan, and this our neighborhood economic development strategy, and this initiative is about equity in addition to economic growth. It really is providing, as Chair Kogan and Commissioner Dixon have said, it's about providing the resources and the opportunities to neighborhoods, business districts that haven't really seen the same opportunities as elsewhere in the city. So we are committed to that, and obviously it's a big part of the Portland plan. So since we adopted the Neighborhood Economic Development Strategy last year, we hit the ground running. We're obviously going to talk about the six districts today, but I just want to point out that we established the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group that Commissioner Dixon referenced. It is the advisory group. And it's more than an advisory group. They're really the leadership for this strategy. So this group has met, I think, three times now. It is a diverse group representing interest across the city. It represents various communities of color across the city, and it also represents different types of expertise, business interests, real estate interests. It represents neighborhood residents. It represents lenders, and it's an impressive group in all respects, and they are providing the guidance for us as we implement this. We've also put dollars to work immediately through our Small Business Technical Assistance Program, dollars that you provided us. To do that, we sent those dollars out to five different coalitions of organizations to provide small business technical assistance where businesses actually are. So we have groups like NEA who are working directly with Native American businesses. We also have organizations like SBDC and Small Business Legal Clinic that are citywide resources. So we feel like we finally have a rational system for providing small business technical assistance. And then the last accomplishment I just want to point out is one that the mayor announced in the State of the City address last month, which is this new partnership we have with an organization called Craft 3, formerly known as Shorebank Enterprise Cascadia. They are one of the largest CDFIs or nonprofit lenders in the Northwest. They have significant resources, and they are committed to serving underserved neighborhoods. And they have committed to putting $1.5 million to work through loans in primarily in East Portland. And so we're happy to bring not only those dollars into these neighborhoods, but also that organization and their commitment to this work.
What is, you say, established CBA with solar power? What's CBA?
That's a community benefits agreement. So it's really the next step up that in terms of agreements with the companies that, and the projects that we're working on to make sure that the benefits of the assistance that we provide to a company or project flows to community residents. So in the case of solar power, we negotiated. It was a mutual agreement that they would work with local work source providers. They would work with PCC to fill their job openings and also work with local suppliers. And they've already been fulfilling that promise. They've been running a number of job fairs. And so that's for us is the model going forward. And you also see it on projects like the Veterans Memorial Coliseum project or the Oregon Sustainability Center where we negotiate with a variety of community partners to make sure these projects work for the community.
Okay, thanks.
So what is the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative? It's a new way of doing urban renewal, as Chair Kogan mentioned. We will establish six districts, and each of the districts will be community-driven, community-led. These districts will prepare their own budgets and work plans. They'll develop their own business development activities, and then they'll implement these activities, and they'll include things that you typically see in a Main Street program, which is business district promotion, some small scale revitalization projects as dollars allow, and then they'll also be the vehicles through which you pull the community in. PDC's role is going to be very different than what it has been in the past, and we're going to serve as a technical assistance provider and basically a coach and helping, as the mayor mentioned, helping these organizations achieve their business plans. But then also we're going to be a grants administrator, so the money for these will flow through us. We will make quarterly grants to these districts, and then we will be the ones who make sure that the money is spent properly. And I think there's a lot being made about about this as a new model for urban renewal, and it is. There's also, we should point out, and I'll show more detail later, there are other dollars being brought to bear on this. They're not just tax increment dollars. Obviously, the revenue sharing dollars are an example of that, but there's also general fund and other monies that are being aggregated to this, and there's opportunity for more, as Chair Kogan mentioned, in terms of bringing together other programs. The county's microenterprise program, we have a microenterprise program, the business technical assistance. So it's a way to really coordinate resource delivery in targeted areas. So the as I mentioned, these districts are based on the Main Street model, and so what we've learned from the Main Street model is that there is a ramp up period, and so the first year is really about building the capacity of the organizations that are going to be managing each of these districts, and then also they have fundraising goals and getting these resources aggregated. So that's really the first year is about helping build the capacity, understanding what strengths are there, and then PDC and our role as a technical assistance provider can help build that capacity, and then there'll be dollars provided as part of that. And then the results start to appear, as we see in the Main Street model, in subsequent years 2, 3, 4, beyond. And then those results, we're going to measure. We're looking for real business results. We're looking for growth in revenues and jobs. We're looking for lower vacancy rates in these areas. We're looking for all the metrics that you would expect to see in healthy, thriving business districts. So the districts themselves, I think everyone's kind of aware of them now, but there are six districts, 42nd Avenue and Cully Boulevard in Northeast Portland, Park Rose, also Northeast Portland, but along the Columbia Corridor, and then three primarily in East Portland, Rosewood, as Commissioner Dixon mentioned, and then the two along Division. One is Division, the Midway area, Division in 122nd, and then Division in 82nd. Those are the six areas, and they were chosen, you can see, for a variety of reasons, but a couple of them were very explicit criteria. One, we wanted to go outside of urban renewal areas. That was the entire goal of this, was to bring resources where we haven't had them in the past. And then we established Outer Northeast and East Portland as priority areas, and so we that's primarily where we looked. But we also wanted to see certain things going on in these neighborhoods, concentration of locally owned and minority-owned businesses, concentration of businesses that served their local districts, and then we also wanted to see some capacity, organizational capacity, for these to help manage these districts. I mean, basically, we wanted to see was obviously underserved districts, but the districts that had real potential, but districts that had a potential to really benefit the local residents in these neighborhoods. It's taken a lot to get to where we're at today, and PDC has done some of the work, but there's been a lot of people in this room who've done a lot of work to get where we're at. It started with Mayor Adams and Chair Kogan kicking off a meeting at ERCO back in November with a packed house there, and I think that even by itself was a sign of how different this was, incredible reaction to that event alone. And then since that time, we've had 60 community meetings, and all across the six areas and of all different sizes. We brought everybody together, about 150 people at one meeting. We've taken an aggressive approach to making sure that our efforts, our organizing efforts, reflected the cultural diversity in these communities. A lot of our communication has been done in Spanish, and then some of the other local communities have translated their documents into other languages on 82nd and Division, as an example. They've communicated a lot of their work in Chinese. So it's been, it's once again, a different flavor to this, really reflecting what's going on in these communities now. So a little bit about the districts themselves. As you can see, each of them is a different size, and that's really based on the assessed value and what gets us to $1.25 million each, and so that's why you have different size districts. I think what I want to point out about these is that when we first started this process, we proposed boundaries for the six districts. We gave the boundaries to the communities, and the communities redrew the boundaries and mostly in ways that made a lot more sense than how we drew them first in the first place. And as long as we could legally do it, we were fine. That was great. And so the boundaries do reflect the districts as the community see these districts. The second thing is, and we'll talk about this in a little more detail, but this is not, as Chair Kogan mentioned, this is pay-as-you-go TIF. So there's no long-term debt issued. When the districts expire, there's no tail on it. So basically there's no lingering obligation. We could move on elsewhere, and there's no ongoing obligation to the city. And so one of the IGAs, the IGA between the city and PDC, really does cover this mechanism, which is we get tax increment as it's realized, and then we use that to make grants to the neighborhood organizations.
So Patrick, could you just explain that for folks watching at home, that it says indebtedness on here, but we're actually not borrowing money for these districts?
It does, right? Say indebtedness. That's right. That's a confusing term. So legally, we have to use the term debt. I was just talking with the folks from OMF outside, and they reminded me we have to use debt because it's contractual debt. But it's really more as the increases in property taxes materialize and the revenues come to the city, that money gets passed through to us, and those are the actual dollars that we use for these activities, which is different than our normal urban renewal area, where there's projections made as to the growth in property taxes, and then the city sells bonds based on that growth in property taxes, and then that as those taxes materialize, they're used to pay off the debt from those bonds. Under the traditional model, when you finish issuing debt, when you finish your activities in a district, you're left with debt, with bonds that have to be repaid over 10, 20 years. And so you really do tie up not just the city bond capacity, but you tie up those areas that can't be used for future urban renewal or for other purposes. And the revenues don't flow to the other jurisdictions, the city, the county, the public schools, until the debt is paid off. So this makes it a much, much shorter time period and lessens the impact significantly.
And so just to clarify again, we're not borrowing for these districts.
Correct.
And
correct.
We're using the term indebtedness, and it might be something like the de jure debt that we do sometimes to...
I would have to, before I answer your question, I have to ask maybe after we're done, maybe we can bring up some of the folks.
I think it would be helpful because the notice that I received, and I think everybody received, perhaps we could have some more explanation about that, the whole issue of okay. debt and whether we're borrowing. Okay. But I really appreciate this approach. I think it does take care of a lot of the concerns that the community has had and that the county has had, that I have had, about long-term borrowing. So I just wanted to make sure that we have that clear before you keep going with your presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so the $1.25 million, does that mean that's the maximum amount of property tax revenue that they can receive over 10 years, or
yes.
is that the max?
That's a maximum that each district will receive.
Over 10 years.
And it's not all tax increment. Actually, my next slide shows you different pots of money, but the 1.25 represents a combination of tax increment, the pay-as-you-go tax increment, plus the revenue sharing that we've talked about, plus some general fund, actually, that we need to particularly in the early years, to provide funding while the increment ramps up.
General fund that's already in the...
Right, that's already in our...
PDC,
and the other thing I want to point out is that because of the, and this relates to Commissioner Salzman's point, when you think about $1.25 million over 10 years, it implies a different set of activities than what people traditionally associate with urban renewal. So large scale revitalization, redevelopment is out of the question. These are small pots of money that definitely need to be matched and leveraged, but that go to much smaller scale activities, but activities that are more consistent with what we've seen used successfully to promote growth in business districts.
But that's why the partnership, because we're, as everyone knows here, much of our, not the general fund, but much of urban renewal is sticks and bricks, as we say. And so having the microenterprise partnership allows for a much more holistic approach to assistance.
Well, even the revenue sharing is not TIF, so that actually...
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so let me walk through this, because it does walk through. So the total cost for this initiative, and we are being all-inclusive here in terms of administrative costs as well, is a little over $12 million over 10 years. And so the actual tax increment that's generated as part of this is is less than half of that. It's $5.4 million. That flows primarily to the districts as well. Then we have the two different revenue sharing pots of money, which are a little over a million each, and those are added to the mix as well. So it's a million each, because the revenue sharing, the impact of the county and the city is basically the same, so they have the same revenue sharing. So both the county and the city have agreed to put that into the mix to increase the amount of money for each of the districts. And then, as I mentioned, and the mayor mentioned, there's about $4.7 million left to complete the initiative that will come out of general fund. It'll at our current appropriation, it'll come out of what we currently get from general fund. It involves us shifting our priorities around for general fund, but we feel like this is a priority initiative for us. But it does, you know, long term, we will have some ongoing general fund obligations out of our general fund allocation. So as we mentioned, we talked about already, the $5.4 million isn't debt; it's pay as you go. The revenue sharing comes from the IGA that is before you today, and then we have our general fund dollars, and a lot of it is in the first few years where we see the least amount of tax increment and revenue sharing to bring to bear on this. I don't want to move on that too quickly.
Oh, are you through with the presentation?
No, I have a couple other slides. I just wasn't sure if you wanted to talk about this slide.
Wait till we hear the whole thing.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that we acknowledge all of our partners here, because they're here, but they deserve recognition in addition to the ones coming up and providing testimony. In addition to the six that are here, we've had tremendous help from obviously the county, but also from Venture Portland. Venture Portland was a critical partner for us in providing technical assistance to all six of the areas as they prepared to apply for these districts. And so I'm not sure we would be here with that.
Just take a moment, a round of applause for the great leadership of Venture Portland. It's fantastic. We're going to hear from Heather in a minute, but we couldn't have done this without many partners, but I would just want to underscore you've been working nearly full-time on this for quite a while now, so thank you.
Heather, I think she would acknowledge that she received a ton of assistance from the Nonprofit Association of Oregon, which really helped. It helped on the capacity building side. That's their expertise. In addition, we've been working with a number of partners on the small business side, including the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, ERCO, NEA, the SBDC, the Small Business Legal Clinic. They've been our partners on the ground in terms of getting, we got those dollars to work right away, and they've already been working in East Portland to help small businesses. And I think you've read some of the success stories. They've been in Oregonia and others. And then, you know, we've had, it's been great to see the private sector support too. Craft 3 is a private not-for-profit, but Umpqua Bank has had somebody on our leadership group. They've been involved the entire time. They're heavily involved in Venture Portland as well. But Burgerville has a big presence in East Portland. Dan Kogan has been at so many meetings and is a big part, I believe, of the 82nd group, right? So, I mean, it's just great to see the private sector support, not just, you know, in terms of the business district, but just getting involved in the community organizing aspect. I think it's also worth pointing out that in Rosewood, the Software Association of Oregon has been involved in Rosewood long before we started this initiative, and is still one of the key partners in helping with the Rosewood effort. So it's been an incredible effort, and as you know, as I've been saying, a very different way of doing business for PDC. So that's the end of the presentation. I really do appreciate the opportunity to present this, and we look forward to your support.
Patrick, thank you for an excellent presentation. Thanks to all of you for an excellent presentation. I have two questions. The first has to do with the administrative expenses for this program. You said it's about $1.25 million per district. What's the portion attributable to PDC expenses in administering the program?
Out of the, you know, I need to follow up on that question. I can get you the exact numbers on the administrative piece of it. Out of the 12, because out of 12.1, we have 7.5 going to the community. So there's I can get you the breakdown of that.
Okay.
I think if I might just interject, I think something that you told me is that you're going to have just one staff person working on all six ongoing. Is that correct?
Each of the administrative overhead for each of the districts ends up being fairly small. So we don't have.